to Minority Corner
with an Eke
and James,
the Wonder Twins of podcasting.
Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues,
only it's more black, queer,
and ladylike. This week on Minority Corner. It's me.
This week on, you thought you did it last week.
We're doing it together.
Oh, I don't mean knowing. I'm just so excited about what we're going to do this week.
Oh my God. All right. Well, what are we doing this week, James?
Okay. Well, don't sound too excited. that took your line. Well, you know what? I'm going to rewind to last month during Pride Month. There was an article that New York Magazine did about highlighting the most influential and powerful drag queens in America. And I think this article itself was a bit of a drag because all of the queens were just from RuPaul's Drag Race. So I want to expand your mind. Who are some other amazing queens that we need to give some honor and respect to, who you need to know about in terms of like the real large drag community that there is?
I love it. Educate the babies. And I got my summer recommendations for you.
Oh, good, good, good. Because I need some things, and I know you got things. So give me them things.
I'm going to get them to you.
Also, I want to tell you about how I tried to start a fight at the Yankees game.
I'm ready for that.
Also, I think we both watched Stranger Three Things? No.
Yeah,
Stranger,
Three Things.
You saw Stranger Three Things?
Three Stranger Things.
We saw three strange things, and we're going to
talk about them.
Also, I want to talk about, I had a fresh reminder through our injustice system that I'm black, in case I tried to forget. The injustice system always wants to try to remind me. I got it. So, all that and more. Let's get into it.
I'm ready. Let's do it. That's where we're coming to you right now.
You know what I loved about that? So we're in 190, and that was a very 90s song we just did. Didn't you feel the 90s in it? It reminded me of Sweet Dreams of Rhythm and Dancing.
Well, you were given a beat. I was kind of going off of like a Sarah McLachlan kind of vibe,
You know what? She was alive during the 90s, so it works.
Doing both 90s. It was a 90s remix. 90s liked a remix.
It was a 90s mashup. We were just like bringing it to you all. A little bit of it all. All worlds colliding. So, it's
Talk
summer.
To me. It's summer.
It's summer. I went to the Yankees with a friend. With her, what?
I went to the Yankees. Not even a baseball game, a Yankees game.
Oh,
it was like the theater.
You know what? It's funny that you mentioned that because every time I go to the Yankees,
stop it.
It is. It's literally dinner theater for me because go get my food and then I just sit down. I see some players like doing some stuff and talking to my friends. I'm eating my food, drinking my beer, and then I go home. I try to watch a play or two. But I'll tell you this: my friend Maury went with her and her husband Chris, and she gets like $2 tickets, but they're super close. Like I've never
How
sat
did she
so
manage
far
to do that
through her company.
Oh, nice.
They have like a little billboard around the like diamond that's like,
oh, that's hella cool.
Yeah. So they're like, here's some tickets. So we've never sat this close before. We were like the fifth row.
Wow.
At the very, like, it was like, it looked like baseball was in high definition.
And yeah, man. That's awesome.
I guess it was. Like, cause it
I
was,
mean,
like,
yeah, you were there. Yeah.
I mean,
I've done
that.
Only one time I went on a date where we sat right behind the batting whatever thing.
It's wild.
That was fancy.
It's like, you can just see, I can see what color their eyes are.
Ooh.
I can see everything. And like, but we're also like the hardcore fans and I'm just there watching my dinner theater, chit-chatting about like, so Stranger Things 3. Ooh, guess what happened at work? What do you got a problem with?
I feel like baseball to me is more of just like an elaborate way to hang out with people and eat bad food.
Yes, that's exactly what happened. Because every time we go, someone makes some sort of like life epiphany. We start talking about something. I don't know if it's the energy of the crowd, but we just start like unpacking dreams and things.
Oh, you guys are not
unhatched.
Watching. You're not watching at all.
I saw a play. There was a few home runs, and I stood up and I gave some high fives. Oh, this is something that there's two things I want to bring up about the Yankees. One.
Yeah.
I have found it very awkward because I went into two baseball games this season, and when the Pledge of Allegiance or the national anthem happens, like I don't stand up. I will say that. I don't stand up.
Hey, you got to do your protest.
That's and it feels, it's really awkward and uncomfortable, but it's
what protest is. It's awkward and uncomfortable.
And I just feel like standing in solidarity. Mainly because I understand what they're saying, and I believe in what is they're saying. And I just think, you know, Colin Kaepernick still does not have a contract. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. Mm-hmm, so it's, you know, and I get all these like side eyes and weird eyes and stuff. And then also like around the seventh inning, they sing another song. They do God Bless America in the middle and everyone's standing up. Definitely not standing up for like, no, like I'm not. Yeah.
God bless America.
There was controversy because they don't play the version that they used to. It was sung by some racist lady.
What?
It turned out that the version that they were playing, this woman was like some sort of like high, like a racist. She just was like, gave money to racist organizations or was a KKK member or something.
What the hell? Forgot. I had no idea.
So they don't play that version. They play like a different version.
At least that. Jeez. Oh my God.
The craziest thing happened. So in the middle of the game, fight broke out. You would have thought we were watching hockey.
Okay, tell me. Like between the baseball players or between the spectators?
The baseball players.
What?
Yes. So it starts off with like someone gets tagged out and then those two players start scuffling and then everybody on the field starts running over there. And then, I didn't even realize this, there's players in little hideout areas.
It's called the dugout.
No, not the dugout. It's across the field. There's another area.
What is this?
It's across the field. I don't know. The players who are not playing, clearly, because they're sitting across the field. I see these players running out on the field from this hidden little cove of an area.
And
it's players coming. It's like that scene in Anchorman when all the news reporters start running out. That's what it looks like. I'm like, oh my God. And there's just everybody and their mom is just running onto the field and there was a fight.
Wild.
It was amazing. And it happened to be when Maury was out getting some beers. And as soon as she came back, I'm like, girl, you just missed the fight.
She missed the whole thing.
But I was like, you know what? Don't worry. I'll start another fight. So I was like, we were so close to the outfield player. So I would be like, hey, Meadows, your mom said that she's really disappointed in you. The Yankees told me that.
Oh my God. Stop.
Just trying to start a little fight. Hey.
Look at you, rebel rouser.
Hey, that guy said you got a big head. He said it. Not me. Don't shoot the messenger.
Wow. You're just really throwing those flame balls out there.
Hey, that guy said that your mom sucks a lot of dick. I didn't say it.
Harsh.
He said it.
That's harsh.
But you know what? And sometimes in you got to stir that pot.
You got that pot. You got that spoon.
What am I supposed to do? Not stir the pot?
You had a duty.
I did. And Maury blessed me with these $2 front row dinner theater tickets.
I love it.
And
you know what?
I wanted her to see the fight.
You are living that privileged life right now. I am jealous of your New York days. New York summer days with James.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's about to get crazier when I'm off in Europe, but that's a story for another day.
Oh, better save that for when you come back.
Yeah, that's all the stories. Did you see Stranger Things 3?
I was just going to ask you that. Yes, I did. I watched it all. Binged that. And it was all right.
Oh, really? Okay.
What'd you think? Did you enjoy it?
I did. I did. I enjoyed it. I think it's such a fun... It's a fun ride. It reminds me of like watching watching the Goonies. This one reminded me of watching Jurassic Park. Like I feel like every season has like a, they're giving little nods to certain movies that we all kind of grew up with.
They
love
to do that. I think that's like one of the fun reasons of watching it is they do such a good homage to like the 80s films that we all know and love.
Yes. I love that Erica had a bigger part this season.
Yeah, she was great.
Yes. So they got a little black girl up in the, you know, the science fiction mystery.
She's
super smart.
Lucas's
sister. She was so great in the second one.
I don't know her name, but she's going to be a big star. She like she brought it.
The one that plays 11?
No, the one that plays Erica.
Oh, okay.
I don't know her real name. Her name ain't Erica.
Are you sure? Oh, I thought she was Erica. Erica Lucas's sister.
I thought on the IMDb
this was a documentary
page.
That about these kids in this town. I really enjoyed it. I love that there's so many female characters. Like, they're broadening the amount of female characters on it. I've always loved it that one thing I love about Stranger Things in the first season is they subvert expectations. Like, in the first one, Nancy's character would have just been like a helpless young lady, but she solves the mystery, she gets the gun and she shoots things, so now every season they're just like, get Nancy a gun because she's the only one who knows how to use it.
I love it. Also, I love that like they showed them after high school and how like the popular kid kind of becomes a loser a little bit after high school. They're doing a really good job with the age transitions. Like, a lot of people are focusing on the kids, on their age transition, like they're teenagers now or whatever, making out, but I also like how they do that weird after high school kind of like transitional weird phase. So
what's
I like
my
that a
life?
Lot.
What am I doing? I also love that like Nancy's sort of experience of like God being like a young woman in the 80s working at a male dominated newspaper. Yuck. And even just like the local newspaper. I thought that was really
good.
Fuck, this is like women's experiences.
I know. Oh, you know, Steve works with that one new woman. I forget what her name
Robin.
Was on the show.
I think Robin. Her name is Robin.
Do you know who her parents are in real life?
Oh, I did, but I forgot. Remind me.
Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman.
Uma Thurman, yes.
She looks just like a melding of the two of them. Yes.
So
amazing.
You know she's got a career ahead of her because she did a great job. She killed it. She killed it. I had one thing, though, that I do wish that, like, there were some new characters that were introduced, and her character was one of them that I thought this could have been like a Latinx or an Asian girl playing that part. Like, I feel like they're still lacking on the diversity front, which is weird because it's just weird for this show to be behind the times in that area because they're so ahead on other areas.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. That would have been an excellent opportunity to do that. Also, wasn't Billy racist last season? Are we just going to forget that?
Yeah, I like that they really tried to like retcon and make this like feel for Billy. And I was like, no.
Billy sucks.
I dug my heels in the sand, and as much as I think that the actor is very cute and attractive,
he's
and incredibly
attractive.
Talented.
I mean, we're not talking about the actor.
You're right. See, don't be fooled. See, that's how they try to get you all confused. Mm-hmm.
We're talking about the character.
Yes, he was a racist and just a terrible human being, and I just wasn't. Yeah, I wasn't gonna be fooled.
Thank you. I'm glad that you were right there with me on that because I was like, what the fuck am I? What am I? What? All right.
Why am I supposed to be like, oh, poor you, boo-hoo, boo-hoo?
Yeah, no, you suck, Billy.
I do appreciate that, like, they're, you know, like, in the movie The Sandlot, when there's a scene at the pool where they're, like, oogling the lifeguard, I like that there's a reverse where he is, it's usually a lady lifeguard.
I like that.
In this one, there's a reverse where they're oogling him. So it's just, again, the show does a really good job of subverting expectations and how things were usually done in the 80s. It's, you know, this is a great example of how you can look back at a different time period with the lens of where you live now. You know?
Oh, also, weren't those all the moms that were hanging out oogling Billy? How come Lucas's mom wasn't involved in that?
Ooh, good point. Yeah, like they really don't like, if they're gonna comment that there's not a lot of black people in the town, then do it more.
Do it,
I guess.
Actually,
like, really
say
do
it. Really point it out. But
they're just playing lip service. And Erica has like three black girlfriends, so clearly there's other black families in the town.
Yeah, so why aren't they at the pool? Like, what's happening?
True. Yeah, that kind of boggled me. Oh, and there's like a new, I forget the guy's name who runs the guy who went to summer camp, space camp, or nerd camp.
That character. Yeah, that guy.
So he's got like a girlfriend who lives in Utah. I kept being like, please let her be like a different, please don't let her be white. Please don't let her be white. That would have been an easy casting choice for her to have been
anybody.
So
literally anybody.
I do think it's interesting that it's very 80s because the semi-villains in the show are Russian, which.
Right.
I think it's interesting because
that's super 80s. Yeah. Oh, because it's now.
Well, yeah. It's sort of everything old is new again. It's sort of revving up. So I think that's fascinating. And will we see more shows where Russians are the villains again?
I mean, you got to look at what's happening, you know?
Yeah, no.
But it also, like, bums me out. I hate, like, broad strokes of stereotypical groups of people, too. You know, like, the 80s could get away with it because it was the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, now, I don't know. Like, Putin is a piece of work.
Terrible.
But I'm sure that there's Russian people that, I mean, you know, like,
sure.
Like, I look at Trump and Trump does not represent me. So.
Right. But I think that, like, for myself, like, if another country were to do movies where, like, the U.S. government were the villains, I'd be like, mm-hmm, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, that's true. I'd be like,
got us. You're right. And
that
for me, and like, my blood is boiling so hard for the Russian government that when I see that, I'm like, yeah. Because I think it reminds people that there is a Russian threat, the Russian government threat.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, even people who are like, again, like, the Tiki Torch guys were saying Russians are our friends. And it's like, what? What are you? Like, they're, it's
really, well, they're just white people.
Well, yeah. Who just see other white people and be like, let's be friends. Even though you want me dead. Voting against your own best interests. I had a good time. I think, too, I have to remind myself when I watch things like Stranger Things that I think about, like, this is, like, the kids who are, like, 10 years old, this is their Goonies. This is their, you know, like, this is going to have, like, 30 years from now, they'll be doing movies that will be paying homage to Stranger Things, you know? God,
wow, that's really, that's meta.
Yeah.
That's, like, meta kind of dissection there, which is really fascinating.
Well, I sometimes have to remind myself of, like, I'm not necessarily the main target demographic that this show is. I think it's a cool show for that families can watch together. And so it's like, I kind of look at it through a lens like that a bit. Cause I know there's some people who are like, it sucked. It was stupid. I was like, well,
no, I didn't think it didn't suck. And it wasn't stupid. I thought it was like a delightful, fun
summer romp.
Yeah. Speaking of being out of a demographic.
Uh-oh. Who told you that?
I made the big mistake of going into Urban Outfitters recently.
Oh, tell me about that experience, please. What happened? Were you like, I don't get any of these graphic tees?
It was like, I was trapped in a vortex where it's like one side, I was like, I remember that from when I was 12. Oh, and then on the other side, I was like, who the fuck would wear this little tiny toilet paper outfit? I felt like a young old person. It's the weirdest thing, and nobody talks about, like, being. Yeah. Maybe I should watch that show from like the 90s or the 80s called 30 something, because.
Oh, yeah.
That was the weirdest experience. It didn't help that I had my baby in a stroller walking through there either, feeling even more like an old person. But like, some of the stuff I was like, yeah, I could wear this. But like, I don't know. It's one of those weird things. It's so weird being like out of youth culture but not in elder statesman culture.
Yes, you are. Because we're actually not really the main demographic that people are marketing towards. Like, we're phasing out of, like, even TV shows. So, like, you don't watch it, I don't care. Like, we're phasing
James,
out of
you
it. We're
literally
at the tail end.
You just worked yourself out of the 18 to 34 demographic that everybody was talking about. I remember when that happened to me and I was like, no.
Wait, I'm still in the 18 to 34 demographic. I'm still here. I am still here.
My opinions
and my interests count.
Enjoy
I like
this
Stranger
year.
Things.
You better be loud this year.
I don't like this. I don't like cats. Make it go away.
I got one more year.
give me Wakanda 2. I need Ant-Man and the Wasp. Like, you're right. I am going to rock my voice. Use my voice.
Yes. Because this over here on it. Side of old, nobody's listening.
No. On a not great, funny, cute note, I'm changing it up. I don't know how to make this transition, but here we go. So, this past, like, just like a few days ago, I just received another reminder about how rigged the system is towards Black and brown people.
Oh, shit. Let's talk about it.
So a few weeks ago, I was on my way to my improv show, my graduation improv show at UCB, and I had like just enough time to make it onto the train. Just enough time. My phone is showing there's massive delays. And there happens to be a subway train car waiting for me right there. And I'm like, sweet. Now, mind you, we have what we call unlimited passes here in New York. So you can buy a 7-day unlimited pass or a 30-day unlimited pass. And that means like you just ride the train as much as you need to because you paid your $30 or $130 and you're good. So
yeah.
I've got that pass because I know I'm going to be needing it. Mm-hmm. And there happens to be the exit gate is open. I don't want to try to like have to maneuver my way through the entrances and exits. People are coming in different ways. I don't want my car to not be able to work. I need to get on this fucking train. So I just go through the exit. I'm like, yes, I've made the train. And I get a tap, tap, tap on the shoulder.
No.
And it's a cop.
Bullshit. And
this cop pulls me off the train, proceeds to write the slowest ticket in the world and makes, I believe, a scene out of it.
And well, yeah, obviously.
I've had nothing but negative interactions with the NYPD. It's very triggering for me. My roommate died, and the year later when they were in my apartment, like, it's just very triggering for me, the NYPD. Mm. And I'm also, I need to get to my show, and all these, I'm going to be late. Like, this is, I've been working on this, like, for UCB. It's my 401. It's my graduation show. I'm just trying to get there. And he's just being not a understanding, sympathetic person. I even show him. I'm like, dude, look, I can swipe my card and it shows that I have already paid. I have unlimited.
Right.
And he's like, don't scan that. I'm like, no, I'm going to show you. I have unlimited. Look, see, boom. And he's like, no, it doesn't matter. I'm writing you this ticket. And I then trying to keep like my cool as much as I possibly can, because in my mind, I'm like, James, you could get arrested if you act too crazy. You could get shot and killed if you act too crazy. Like, I'm trying to keep those things in mind.
Yeah, good.
But like, he's not making it easy for me. I'm like, dude, if you're going to write the ticket, let's go. If not, like, and it's also frustrating when you know that you're not necessarily in the wrong. Yes, you didn't follow the rules accordingly, but I've paid my share for the week. So
exactly. That doesn't make any sense. Like, he should have, I don't know. I feel like people will have more respect towards cops if cops actually act like citizens, which they are. Like, your job is to be a public servant, not to be fucking above the law dictator of the street. Like, I don't know. That sort of shit really bothers me because it's so obvious that their access to power has gotten to their heads.
Yeah. Because that's what I mean. Literally, like, there's no harm. It'd be one thing, like, if I did not pay, you got me, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Or if I'm like, I have $30 on my card, but I didn't use it. No, it's like, I had unlimited, which is the only reason why I walked through that fucking gate, because I'm like, I don't have time. I don't want to get fucked over by the MTA. I missed this train. And then the next one's not coming for like 15, 20 minutes. I'm late for my show. So luckily, there was a nicer lady cop who came over, and she was understanding and sympathetic.
That's
She's like, well, if we see it, we have to write a ticket. And she's like, hopefully you'll make the show. I'm rooting for you, yada. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to contest this ticket because I have on my my bank statements show that I have paid. And also they can scan the subway card, and they can also see that I had paid the day before for a 30-day unlimited. So
I think that you should do it because there's a little known secret that they don't show up.
Oh, no, I did.
Okay.
I went to my hearing. And when I go there, because I'm like, when I go there, it's nothing but in the waiting room, it's nothing but black and brown people.
Of course.
There to contest these tickets. And so.
So fucked up.
It's again like on a micro level how, and it made me think, I live in Harlem at 125th Street. Had I been over on the Upper West Side at 72nd Street, those cops aren't trolling. They're trolling these neighborhoods specifically. Yep. And it goes back to the stupid broken glass, the broken windows policy, where it's like, if you stop these small minor infractions, the larger infractions won't happen. But
which
instead,
is actually just harassment.
It's harassing and targeting specific communities.
Yeah, exactly.
And surveilling these specific communities. And these people, like, you know, I had to, you know, some people have to take off from work to try to fight these things, and it's $100 ticket. It's not that much, but like, and I'm fortunate that it's not that much, but for me, it's just like, it's the principle behind it. So, I went to my hearing. There was there was like, I was so mad when the door opened up and I had this white guy who was going to be adjudicating my thing. And I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
I wish I would have had the, you know, nice white lady over there, but nope, got the white guy. Mm-hmm. And he runs me through, it's like a mini trial right there in his little office.
Shit.
He's recording the whole thing. I have to raise my right hand to swear to tell the truth, all this sort of stuff. Yeah. I wave my right to an attorney because I thought it's for one small infraction, like you can see I have the receipts, you know?
Right. Yeah. And you're like, can I present this to you?
I walk him through my case and everything, explain everything I just explained to you, my reasonings of why I did it. I just didn't want to be late. I had already paid for the pass.
I had no idea you did this.
He looked like he was understanding and he was like, okay, let me understand this correctly, yada, yada, yada.
Okay.
And then I have to go out into the lobby and then I get called up. The guy at the window says what the guy found me as, and he still found me guilty. And
oh my
I have to
God,
pay.
What the fuck?
$100 fine. Because in his thing, he was like, you know, I do believe that he is sympathetic. He said something to the fact of like, he believes that I am like understanding, or like I am sincere in what it is that I was saying, that I was telling the truth.
Then
but
why didn't he give you?
The law is the law, essentially. So you're telling me, and I could like, I've already on top of like the $130 that I already spent in that month,
$100.
So I'm going to write an appeal.
Oh wow, you're really taking this to the top.
It's just annoying. And I'm going to print out like, here's all the money that I've spent. Like I probably average $120, $130 a month on the MTA. So clearly I pay my fair share.
Right.
So I'm going to send them like, here is all the money that I've spent on the MTA for the past year.
James, you are doing it.
It's just annoying. And to me, it was just an example again of like being black in this country of this is the shit that you have to deal with and you have to go through. And I also wonder now, too, if I was, you know, white, like a young white girl, I don't think that I would have been found guilty. I don't think any of the situation would have happened. But from the time the cops saw my black skin to still showing up in court, I was already guilty. And this is how we can't get ahead when it's shit like this.
Amen.
Like it continues to keep us down and financially keeping us policed.
Yep.
And we have to fight these little small little fights that white people in this country do not have to face on a daily basis that we do. And this is just a small, this comes on the heels of, you know, Eric Garner's.
This is the truth. I'm glad that you're bringing this up because Eric Garner is huge. He died. Yeah. That's a big deal. Yes. National news. But what you did is the 1,000 paper cuts that we as black people have to deal with on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's all of these things. And I'm sure the judge, I'm sure that one first police officer, they would say, oh, I don't have a racist bone in my body. But no, you have bias that causes you to act a certain way. Somebody recently tweeted out this one woman who is full on Trump supporter, is a retired nurse. That to me shows that she already, if you support Trump, especially right now, and you're outspoken about it, you're racist. But during her job, even though maybe she wasn't doing anything outwardly racist, she was still probably providing less care to black and brown patients, causing them to be more vulnerable to dying. So we put all of these people that have these biases into positions of power, and that just keeps us down.
Yeah.
It could be blatant and it could be not blatant. These are serious things that we need to think about that lead us to the bigger infractions like Eric Garner and, you know, our president and tiki torches. Like it doesn't just magically happen. Like it doesn't pop out of nowhere, these racist things, big occasions. It's the tiny little things like you being targeted in your community by something that probably wouldn't normally happen to you if you were a blonde white lady.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. I've literally seen white women jump over the turnstiles and just like nothing, you know, happening. Like because they weren't in those neighborhoods and in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also to bring up Eric Garner, like it's just again, I think his killers were found, like they're not, no charges are being brought up against those police right now who
and the guy
him.
Who filmed it is in jail, prison, and his daughter died because she was of a heart failure, which basically came from just stress induced.
I mean, the system is fucking rigged. So
it's just a ripple effect.
It is, yeah. And I like your example of, like, not like, but yeah, the little paper cuts, like, it's all a part of that same system. And so I just got a reminder that I am still Black in this country and a second-class citizen and being policed and trolled in a different way. So, yep.
We need to fix it, America. God damn it.
Fix it. Fix it.
Fix it.
Should we get to the main event? We're going to totally switch gears again.
Okay.
And we're going to talk about drag.
Yay.
Drag, and specifically this article that the New York Magazine wrote is a specific drag.
Oh, okay. Let's do it.
Hi, I'm Dave.
Hi, I'm Graham.
And we're two house DJs who have been trapped inside our drum machine.
We love it here, and we'd love if you stopped by and visited us every week on Stop Podcasting Yourself
here on MaximumFun.org.
We're just a couple of doofuses from Canada.
And listen to our show or perish. Stop Podcasting Yourself
on MaximumFun.org.
James's Corner, James's Corner, time is James's Corner, draggity drags. Is that drag disrespectful?
No, it's not. Okay. No, it's on brand with what we're talking about. So this article that New York Magazine and Vulture did, it's a bit of a... So it's the most powerful drag queens in America.
It was a weird article.
So it sounds exciting and this sounds like, and they're doing it for... For me, it was like they're pandering because it's Pride, so they're trying to do like a quick and dirty Pride one, and So I bet you would think, James, you don't like drag queens. I love drag queens. I love them, but the problem is all of the queens were from RuPaul's Drag Race, and
this is very true.
That's where it begins to be problematic. So it was populated by just queens who've been on Drag Race, as if drag is like this new thing that these young queens are the ones like. Creating and commanding, like drag existed before RuPaul's Drag Race. When I tell people, mainly straight people, that I don't watch RuPaul's Drag Race, I've watched a few episodes like at a friend's house because it's like a community sort of thing, but I don't watch it. And people look at me like I'm crazy. And I find that like a lot of times straight people like are rushing to tell me that they watch Drag Race as a way to be like, I watch queer things.
Include me. I know.
I feel like it's like them trying to show me that they're down with like queer things or like, you know, queer culture. And it's like, okay, that's, you know, I think it's, and I don't get me wrong. First of all, I think if you really want to get down with queer culture, like Pose is a great way. That's like, to me, very deep.
But I mean, that's new too.
Sure. But like, you know, RuPaul's Drag, it's safe. It's a safe entry into the queer entertainment world. It's campy.
Totally.
It's fun.
Right.
And I love that RuPaul's Drag Race is like hitting the mainstream, and especially for folks who are young and queer in the middle of the country, I feel like it gives them, it's like a siren song that there is a world outside, there are people outside, similar to like how the Real World of Miami was for me when I watched like Dan and the Real World of Miami. It was like, and that's what I thought, I was going to move to Miami after I turned 18. I was going to college at University of Miami, and my dad was like, I'm not paying for that. It's out of state tuition. So I was like, okay, I have to be gay in my own state.
That's not a bad state to be gay in, though. Let's just be honest. California is chill.
I gotta get out of here. And I went to like Santa Cruz, where everyone was on the queer spectrum.
James.
Like, I turned out okay.
I had to just address that for a minute because it's not like you were in like
Nebraska or something.
No,
it's Kentucky, you know?
You were in California.
Yeah. Also, like, one thing that I love, so RuPaul's Drag Race comes on Friday nights, and what it does, it comes on, like, before, you know, the night kicks off, so it's an opportunity for a lot of gaggle of gays to come together, and so there's a lot of great stuff, do not
pre-drinks.
Get me wrong.
Yeah.
I love it, but I think when lists like this come out, I think it becomes problematic, and in some ways, too, it has...
it's not the end-all, be-all.
Yes, it's a little taste and a small snippet into drag community and culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's just a small, like, the drag lexicon is so huge, and the history of what drag is. And in some ways, like, you know, some of these queens, some of the legendary drag queens have equated RuPaul's Drag Race with, in some ways, you know, when something hits the masses, it gets dumbed down. It gets watered down.
For sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, also RuPaul's Drag Race, like, you know, the real, like, also, like, real drag to me, like, it's not, it's just, it's really, like, the stuff that they do at the very, very end when they do, like, the lip sync off, like, that's, that's more so as what a lot of the, it's performance, and it's, like, it's theatrical, and it's not just, like, these crazy challenges and making dresses, like, it's avant-garde,
let's,
you know.
Let's call it for what it is. It's a television reality competition program. It's not what you're going to get when you go to a gay bar and watch a drag queen perform.
Oh my God. They'll have sometimes backup dancers. Sometimes there's like, they're telling a story. I was in a piece that was Lord of the Cock Rings once, and I was, we were doing single ladies choreography dressed up as Lord of the Rings characters. And we told the story of Lord of the Rings in 6 minutes. I was Gimli. I was the one, I had a huge beard. In fact, when I would do a big Beyonce turn, my beard would keep going wrapping around my body.
I love it. It was amazing. That's hella funny.
But you would get creative, and like, there's just the theatricality of it. And a lot of times now, like, you know, like one of the, I think Jacqueline was saying, sometimes these queens, they spend like, you know, 5 hours on their makeup, and they just go up there and there's no performance, and they're just collecting dollars. And it used to be like storytelling. And so I and also, you know, there's like a history of, you know, drag, especially like, especially San Francisco does not get any love on RuPaul's Drag Race. There's only been one queen from
Which
San Francisco.
Which is so weird.
Honey Mahogany was the only one to be there from San Francisco. And there's a rich history in San Francisco. Like, there was...
San Francisco.
There's this... people used to perform at a place called Finocchio's in North Beach in the 1950s. And then there was the... gender fuck playfulness of the Cockettes.
Oh,
and,
yeah, like, the, of course. Yeah.
And then also Heclina, who we'll talk about in a moment, who had Tranny Shack, problematic title, but it was a different time back then.
And it was also, it's a legend.
It's a legendary, from the 1990s to the 2000s.
Now called Mother, right?
Now it's, Mother. So the Advocate published a dismissal of... this New York Magazine's list.
Shit.
Mm-hmm. So they had 4 points. One, no drag queens actually help with the list. So that's kind of...
That's dumb. Why didn't... Yeah. Okay. Oh, good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Two, this list, again, the main point that I brought up, was there's only contestants on RuPaul's Drag Race, so that's problematic, negating all these other queens.
Yeah, this would have been a perfect opportunity to introduce drag queens to...
To the mass, to people who don't like, what is the full spectrum of this culture, and who are some of these other people? Like, this is an easy.
Yes.
Yeah.
You just introduce some RuPaul's drag queens to get people who are like, I'm cursory, and then you dive deeper into it, stupid.
Exactly. I nominate you for editor in chief. Like,
thank you.
Number three, the descriptions are lazy as fuck and sometimes shady, and they're just full of mistakes. Like, it just was like slapped together.
True. Yeah, I read it and I was like, what is this?
Yeah. Like, they're just like, apparently, like, Jujubee was just cited as like, never won a challenge. Like, I'm sure she's done other things. Like, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That's her.
Like, what the fuck? Oh my God.
And also, like, why are we ranking people? Like, the queens often on the list hated it. Like, they are just like, why are we being ranked? This is stupid. And
also, I heard that they didn't like their pictures either.
Yeah, all their pictures were taken at, like, DragCon or something that had just happened. Like, this thing was slapped together last minute, not a lot of work and research done. So,
and a cover piece, too. What is happening?
Yeah, like, I guess we need to... I guess, you know what? I never give them money. Maybe I'm going to start... If this is to get some better article writing. Jesus. Yeah, we do need to fund you. Maybe this was like a cry for help. We're writing shitty articles. Please give us money. We need help.
Oh my God.
So SFIS did an article that like interviewed some of these San Francisco queens, like Heclina, Peaches Christ, and Juanita Moore. And so I'm actually going to
huge drag queens, by the way.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you just a few drag queens that you should know who've been slaying it and doing the actual work. And I'm also going to link the SFist article. And I'm going to pull some quotes from some of these legendary queens that they interviewed and their opinion. Just to kick things off, Heklina, who we'll talk about in a moment, she said, nobody can tell me that Tammy Brown of season one, who was eliminated really fast, is more powerful than me. So,
ooh, shit.
Yeah. So other queens that you should know. So there's Miss Coco Peru. Coco Peru, she's really cute. She has like this like sort of like 60s red sort of hair, like short hair flip. It's always perfectly flipped upward.
Yeah,
she's just been performing forever. And she did a lot of cabaret shows in New York in the 1990s. She's been in a lot of movies. She was in Too Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Newmar. She was in the movie Trick with Tori Spelling. Did you ever see the movie Trick?
I don't think so.
It's like queer canon. Like, it's, I say starring Tori Spelling, it's like, she's in it. Like, it's just the only name that I can remember. But
But she isn't like the star or whatever.
She's not. It's by these two guys. Yeah. Will and Grace.
I've definitely heard of Coco LaRue, though.
Coco Peru, she's been a lot of stuff. She's been Willa Grace, How I Met Your Mother, Arrested Development. She's done a lot of stuff for theater. Yeah, a lot of stuff in theater. She's won GLAAD Awards. Just done like a lot of stuff. So already off the bat, like, you know, she's doing shit. She
has, right, like, doesn't one need of her, to be on Drag Race.
Doesn't need to. And that's like a lot of these queens, they've been like asked to, like Heklina and Peaches Christ, who we'll talk about, they were asked to be on Drag Race and they were just like, we've already got our brands and our names. No, thank you.
Yeah.
So there's also horror, and these are not ranked in any order because I'm not about that life. They're just names I'm listing. So
good, I like that.
Horachata.
Emphasis on like the whore and horchata together.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, cute. Mm-hmm. So reigning queen of Brooklyn, wild, delightful, artsy, quirky. Horchata's drag is inspired by her life as a Latinx punk growing up in San Antonio, Texas.
Cool.
As she says, Brooklyn freaky clown, Latina drag. So that's what she does. She's also the co-founder of the new iconic Bush Wig Festival that's been happening in Brooklyn, which has been a really great celebration that's been happening in the summers. It's sort of like, I think that's tacked into Brooklyn Pride that happens early in the summer.
Oh, cool.
She's been performed in Berlin, Mexico. She's been featured in the New York Times, Vogue, Homes? Paper, countless other magazines. Just definitely legend in her own right.
Cool.
We've got Peaches Christ. So
huge here in the Bay Area.
Huge here in the Bay and just world, like globally. I've worked with Peaches Christ on shows before. Peaches, I owe a lot of the great, my doing work with Darcy Drollinger and getting in, doing the Shit and Champagne series. Peaches Christ connected me to Darcy Drollinger. So big things to Peaches.
Yeah.
So Peaches made her name in 1998, hosting this event called Midnight Mass, which was a pre-midnight film variety show. And it got so popular that it welcomed guests like John Waters, Cloris Leachman.
Love it.
And was even a six-part special on the HDNet movie channel. She made a horror movie called All About Evil in 2010, which had Natasha Lyonne and Cassandra Peterson. Elvira was in it.
Wow.
It has gained a huge cult following. I'm sure you can find it on some streaming channel or network because Peaches loves horror movies. And in fact, the Midnight Mass movies have evolved into now once a month, Peaches does like drag spoofs of, so at the Castle Theater, they'll play like Clueless. And then Peaches Christ will do a Peaches Christ production of a drag version of Clueless.
Yeah, they just did First Wives Club, I think, recently.
Yeah. So they'll do all kinds. Like, I was in their Clueless one. They do. They're huge, and they're so much fun. And now they'll pull in, obviously, queens from RuPaul's Drag Race because they're so big and huge and, you know, got to sell tickets. But Peaches has been doing this for a long time before these queens, giving these queens another space to, like, you know.
Right, exactly. Outside of the show where you gotta start making your coins.
Yes, exactly. So they also did like Drag Becomes Her with Bendella Creme, who I've made out with, and Jinx Monsoon, who I've made out with on New Year's Eve.
What?
Oh, yeah. I don't want to bore you with my...
Is that boring? I don't think so. I didn't know that you made out with Bendella Creme.
Yeah, I had a boyfriend at the time,
Jinx Monsoon?
Jinx Monsoon was my New Year's Eve kiss.
Wow. Okay. All right. Keep it moving. Just dropping that. Dropping those little tidbits. You
know, here's the thing. I don't know who these queens are, but I'll make out with them and do shows with them. Like, I've performed with both Ben de la Creme and Jinx Monsoon and Willem, who we've talked about on the show.
Who's not a nice person.
Yes. So one thing that I liked that Peaches was saying that, you know, when Peaches says that when she started doing drag, the fans themselves were the artists and the weirdos, and that there'd be the different drag cliques in San Francisco, but they all got along. So you had, you know, the Tranny Shack weirdos and the Imperial Court and the Sister of Perpetual Indulgence, but they all, you know, came together. But now everything's such a competition.
Oh, and that sucks. I don't like that.
She said when she got news of the article and that, you know, she wasn't on it, or Heclina wasn't on it, she said that all I could do was point and laugh. And she said, I was texting Heclina and Varla Jean Merman about it. And she's like, what's the alternative? That we just sit around being bitter and resentful about the fact that we're not getting the credit that maybe we deserve. So they just laughed it off. This list was bullshit. This one, Hot Chocolate, aka Larry Edwards. I met Larry Edwards. I think she goes by Larry, but she is in Vegas and she's a renowned Tina Turner impersonator.
Cool.
So she got me free tickets and passes and was so kind to me and my friends when we went to Las Vegas because a friend knew her and got us in touch. And she just was so sweet and so amazing. She was in Miss Congeniality 2, Armed and Fabulous, impersonating Patti LaBelle.
Oh, wow.
She was also in What's Love Got to Do with It, which I think that's interesting because she impersonates Tina Turner. So I don't know. So she's also been on Tonight Show with Jay Leno. And just like she is a staple in Las Vegas drag scene. And she's in Frank Marino's Timeless Divas Las Vegas show, which is a really great impersonator.
That's like an institution.
Yeah. So Hot Chocolate. And then we get to Heclina, who we know and love.
San Francisco institution.
She actually plucked me out of obscurity, as she liked to say, because I was go-go dancing for Heclina, and then she needed someone to help her out with her Michael Jackson, Janet Jackson number for Tranny Shack. I choreographed it, and that's how I ended up working with Barrier Flash Mob, Peaches Christ, Darcy Jolinger. Like,
amazing.
I owe a lot of my success and work to Heclina, and Heclina's just huge. So Heclina, I really got started in the 90s and has appeared on E! Network, The Daily Show, Good Morning America. She was in the Scissor Sisters music video for Filthy Gorgeous. She started Tranny Shack, which was an institution, and now she co-owns the Oasis Cabaret Nightclub in San Francisco, which I've done a lot of shows there. It's an institution now.
I know.
What was it? Huh?
Well, I was just going to say that I remember when it was opened, you were like, I'm on the permanent guest list. And I was excuse me.
I am on the permanent guest list, which is something I have to remind them of when I get coming to town. I'm like, but I'm not paying for a show ever. I helped open I made so much money for that show that place when it first opened. It gets often voted like number one, like gay nightlife scene.
The spot.
It is the spot. So if you're in San Francisco, definitely check out Oasis. It's interesting because this speaks to Heclina's power. She's the one that, like, when those queens need, like, she books the Rue Girls for her Saturday night show. So that's power. You're talking about who the most powerful queens, like, she's the one who's booking these queens at her nightclub, you know?
Gatekeeper.
Yes. And she actually said that the rates for these queens started to, like, really skyrocket. And some of these queens who had, like, didn't even make it to the top, had been voted off early on, were trying to, like, charge these crazy rates. So then Heclina just stopped booking them and started Peaches. And then their rates started to come down. And some queens, like,
that.
Yep. Like, they just were skyrocketed. They're like, if we pay you that, we're not going to make any money. So, no, we'll have a show with or without you. It doesn't matter. So,
right. Half of these queens are, like, super new anyways when they go on the show. It's almost like a discovery thing. It's television, power of it. Vulture.
Yep. So, Alaska, Sharon Needles, they do a hometown rate now. So, that's cute. But, you know.
Oh, okay.
Just two more real quick. So, we have Lady Bunny. So, Lady Bunny.
Huge.
Right? Like, how is Lady Bunny?
How did they not put Lady Bunny? Like, even RuPaul's Drag Race knows to honor Lady Bunny.
Yes, exactly. Legendary. Because her and Ru came up together in the Atlanta scene. And she's been going at it since the 80s. And big signature look of big curves, big hair. Mm-hmm. And also, there's an HBO documentary. HBO did their homework. It's a documentary called Wig.
Yes.
And Lady Bunny, her big thing is she started wig stock back in 1985.
Yes.
In the height of the AIDS epidemic to boost morale, also raise money for the community. And there's a documentary on HBO right now called Wig that kind of talks about that history. And it came back, I think last year was their first year back with wig stock. It had a 17-year hiatus, and Neil Patrick Harris and his husband, David Burka, helped revive it.
Yeah. Highly suggest watching the old Wigstock documentary, too. It's what got me into drag queens when I was in high school. I watched them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a documentary then about Wigstock. Yeah.
Yeah, there's two. Yes, you're so right. Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Lady Bunny's just been like doing it. There's a really funny article that I'm going to link as well. And it came out, I think, last year. And it says, Lady Bunny is still the shadiest queen around.
Yeah.
What I love is like she kind of just talks. It's a great article because she talks about, you know, how the drag queen scene has like changed. And also like she's just really honest. She's like, you know, I'm not like a mama drag queen type. Like she's like, that's not me. Like some of us are hateful and demented. She's like, but that's, you know, she's not going to be your drag queen mother. That's not her. And you're just also trying to find authenticity. Like Rue wears a flower in her hair, so everyone wants to wear one. So it's like trying to find your own outside of just
style,
just, like,
voice.
Yeah. Instead of just being cookie cutter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This was the San Francisco one. This is Juanita Moore. Mm. Not to be confused with Juanita Moore, who's an American film, television, stage actress who's black. Because if you just Google. Yes. Who's like in the vein of like Hattie McDaniel's God with the Wind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So not that Juanita Moore.
Okay.
But yeah, so Juanita Moore, she is quintessential San Francisco drag queen. She's been performing for like 20 years. She's deeply intertwined to the major drag scene, across, especially in San Francisco, but across the country. Like she's just known. She's a pillar in the queer community. She hosts regular parties and happy hours, a lot of fundraisers for the queer community.
Nice.
Especially around, you know, HIV and AIDS fundraising. I think it's still running. It's called Booty Call Wednesdays at Q Bar.
Okay. Ooh, that's fun.
I've only went once because it's a Wednesday, but it is the scene to go to. It's Wednesday. I'm like, what are we doing? I can't.
I know. It's the middle of the week. I gotta go to bed.
Can't be going that hard. But you know what? Here's the thing is that a lot of times things are changing, but in the queer community, we have those odd jobs that were not.
Right.
We couldn't get jobs that were 9 to 5, you know? Mm-hmm. So we were able to have, like, that's why, like, I think a lot of queens had, like, Mondays off because if they were, like, hairdressers, like, they didn't work on Mondays.
Monday.
So Sundays they'd go hard and they'd have tea dances on Sundays. So
that's right.
Yeah. So there's just all this like history that it's really upsetting and annoying that these other younger queens, I think they could have made a list that was more inclusive of these
Vulture's
up and coming ones.
Perpetuating this.
Yeah. Honorable mention, there's Lip Synca, who they say has invented modern drag queen like performance. Her name was Lip Synca, and what she would do is she would lip sync like all kinds of things, like old recordings of old movie star actresses mixed in with music.
Love that.
And you might see newer queens do this, and Lip Synca was sort of the originator for that. Yes, there it is. And, you know, on the same side, like both Heclina and Peaches and all of them, they do say, you know, on one end, Drag Race has been really great for business. Like, you know.
Right. It's mainstream.
Mainstreaming it. But it's still got to find that balance between also the art form. Like, again, some of these queens are just getting up there and collecting tips and dollars and not really performing.
Doing
and putting
anything.
On a story. Yeah. Put on a performance. Put on a show. Put on, you know, just put on a wig. And, you know, Peaches says that she'd rather see some booger drag with, you know. That's what they call it. Her words.
When it's
mine.
Bad. Yeah.
Yeah. A booger drag with some amazing killing it performance than just someone who has a pretty face and just, you know.
Barely moving around on stage.
Yeah. So.
I love it. Do your research, everybody. Vulture, do your research. Get real people to actually that are involved in the community. Write your articles. Get listen to James, who actually has been up on that stage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on. It's insulting. If me, a podunk-ass straight woman, knows that you're faulty with your article, then...
Something's not right.
Also, I gotta give myself a little bit of credit. I'm not just a
you do. You be knowing. You, I mean, you watch it. I didn't see that wig documentary. Like you know, Lady Bunny. Like yeah, like.
I don't. I don't actually know her, but I know.
I know, but you know yeah. of her. Well,
we gotta clarify. You know these people making out with Ben De La Creme.
I do. I know their lips. But the editors of New York Magazine clearly don't. You know more than the editors at New York Magazine, apparently.
Thank you. It's true. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and it's a quick Google search. This took me like not that much time to be able to, you know, find out who some of these other queens
right.
that I should be mentioning. It does not take that much work. So
it
do
really
work.
Doesn't.
I guess do donate to your local magazine because they need money.
So you want to understand what's going on in the world.
But trying to keep up with the news can be such a headache.
With clickbait headlines, TV news acting like there's always two equal sides to every story.
And never enough talk about the various McDonald Playland characters.
Okay, in my defense though, when I brought that up, we learned a lot.
That's true.
I'm Brent Black.
I'm Courtney Unlow.
And I'm Travis McElroy.
With Trends Like These.
Real life friends talking internet trends.
We debunk misleading headlines from the top trending news.
We always throw in at least one positive story.
But we call out bullshit when we see it.
Join us each week on MaximumFun.org.
Because with trends like these,
who needs any memes?
Ah? Ah?
Yeah, that was great.
Nectar's recommendations. What she gonna be recommending? I bet it's not cats.
Nope.
Are you sure? Maybe you came around to it. It's been a week.
No.
Maybe you've rewatched it. You watched the behind the scenes and you're like, ooh, I am into this.
No. Okay. Watch this turns into like a cat podcast. Like cats podcast. We like it that much. We just talk about the history. Okay, no. Okay, so my recommendations. It's summertime. Mm-hmm. Last week you got James's recommendations. This week you get Neke's recommendations. Let's start with television.
Recommendations.
My recommendations. Okay, so let's start with television. Ooh. I would like to recommend on HBO, there's a show called Los Spookies. Ooh. It is fucking hilarious and weird and bizarre. So Fred Armistead and Julio Torres. Julio Torres is a writer on SNL, and he is like my favorite type of comedy. He's also a stand-up comedian. He is like full on weird. Like a couple of his sketches that he's done written, one is Wells for Boys, which is like... all about fucking like when you have a little strange little boy, what do you get him? You get him a well that he can tell secrets to.
That makes sense.
It's mm-hmm. so good. So Los Spookies is kind of a revolutionary show because it's a bilingual show. It takes place in some they don't say where it is, but it's in Latin America. And it's these three friends that are really into like horror movies and stuff. And they do kind of like Scooby-Doo mystery where they like create, like somebody will be like, I need to pretend that I'm haunted. And they'll be like, oh, okay. And they'll create the haunting for you. But it's both in English and in Spanish. When it's in Spanish, there's the English subtitles. When it's in English, there's Spanish subtitles, and it like takes place in this weird bizarre world, and it's totally like tongue-in-cheek. Like at one point they go to a town where the town needs like they need more tourists, and the reason they need to have a new attraction is because they had an owl who wore a wig, but then the wig disappeared.
stop it. Oh my god.
And they have like little like missing signs of the wig. It's like it's just so good. And it's also like very like it comments on a lot of like the US ambassador is like basically this Barbie lady, and it's just like there's this weird character called named Pepito. It's just like really good. I highly recommend it. Watch it. It's only 30-minute episodes. You can binge in like 2 seconds. If you like...
This sounds super fun.
Oh my god, it's so much fun. It's like... I could go on and on about all the characters and like all the weird like little nuanced things. Like Julio Torres is gay, and in the show he plays like this chocolate heir, and he's going to be married to this one guy who's a cookie heir. And at one point he's like, I don't want to marry you. And then the cookie heir goes, fine, good luck finding another gay guy. And like walks out of the room. It's like, what the hell? Like,
oh my God. I've only seen posters for it. You should watch it. The title itself was very intriguing to me.
I know, Los Spookies. It's so good.
Yes.
You got to just watch it. It's just like, it's one of those, like, if you like Wes Anderson movies, but, like, you miss people of color being involved in it.
Yes.
You should.
Yes, that's exactly me. Yeah. That's me.
It's full-on weirdo Wes Anderson, spooky, kind of kooky vibes. Like, I love it.
Oh, my God. Yes, I'm so
And I feel
it.
Like if you can watch, like, an episode over again and be like, oh, my God. Like, there's this weird character named Tati, and she's online dating, and, like, they're like, can we see what he looks like? And it's literally the prince from Sleeping Beauty. And everybody's just like, oh, Tati. It's so like stupid. But watch it. It's really good. Los Spookies. I've been really, I'm not going to suggest Love Island, but if you want like a reality show that's really stupid,
Love Island.
It's just like a nice, breezy, dumb thing. I have to watch a lot of things while tending to a baby. And this is like,
so you're limited.
Yeah, like I can't just dive in, you know?
Yeah. Well, also, too, well, you know, I tried to audition for Love Island, but it's only for heteros.
Oh, it is? Well, one girl is bi on there.
Oh, maybe that's what I need. I need to click that box. Because, like, it was, because I guess the British version, it's everybody.
See, we're not to the standard of British version yet.
Yeah. Well, and not to detract too much, definitely I would put this on the not recommendable list, Big Brother this year.
Oh, racism.
Because you know in one fell swoop, they got rid of three POCs in one night.
I mean, isn't this
one
the case all the time,
night,
though?
Aneke. I don't know why I keep being surprised. Yeah. Like, the Celebrity Big Brother tends to be better cast. There's more diversity on it because it's the Canadian casting does the Celebrity Big Brother casting, so it's more diverse.
Yeah.
But the U.S. casting house is hella racist. They put tokens in there,
stupid.
And then they're the first ones out because you're just voting people out who are just trying to find something wrong with them, and subconsciously, because everyone has bias, they're just like, well, that brown person,
well,
that black girl.
You know what? Never watch Big Brother. Don't plan to unless you get casted on it. So there's that. Okay.
Thank you.
Podcast recommendations.
Ooh,
I got two.
Ads.
So first of all, I know Malcolm Gladwell, he can be a little controversial. Some of his opinions are a little archaic or whatever, but his podcast, Revisionist History, I highly recommend it.
I've heard good
things. It's always, he uncovers all the little bits of history or things that we just don't pay attention to, and it really changes how we look at history. I'm in the middle of an episode where he's talking about the Boston Tea Party and basically how the American Revolution was started because America was smuggling tea, which is the reason why UK wanted to tax it. So basically our founding fathers are kind of criminals. So it's fascinating.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
I'm not surprised either.
Wow.
But it's just an interesting take on how to like kind of understand that. And also the college tuition, like getting into college exams, how we lean heavy on the name brand of colleges instead of actually like how we do on tests and how we do with studying and all of that sort of stuff. It's really fucking fascinating. So Revisionist History is a good podcast. Another one is the series Radiolab. Hardly needs any introduction if you are into podcasts, but the newest, they have a sub-series on Radiolab called G that I highly recommend. It's all about the IQ test. And how the first episode of the G series of Radiolab is all about how the IQ test is racist. And did you know, James, that it is illegal to test, to give a black person the IQ test in California?
Really? Mm-hmm. Why? Because it's fucked up.
Well, because in the 70s, there was a court case saying that it's racist. And they talk about the court case. They talk about the kid that the John Doe kid who it was affected. It's just really fascinating. And then in the following episodes, it kind of goes deeper into how black kids not being able to take the IQ test might be problematic, how the IQ test actually could be a good thing. It helped uncover what lead poisoning is, actually, the IQ test. They go into what happened to Einstein's brain. It's fascinating. So,
wow. Yeah,
check out G series by Radiolab. Really suggest it. Okay.
I wonder if the EQ test is racist at all, because people have been trying to, like, that's emotional intelligence.
I don't know.
And they've been weighing that more, like, people have been weighing that a bit more than IQ tests lately. I've been hearing it being buzzed about of like, yeah, IQ, but no, your EQ, which is your emotional intelligence. What's
I
that?
I don't know. And last but not least, I got a music suggestion.
Ooh, I love music.
The new Beyonce album is good. The Lion King presents
isn't it like
the
Lion
gift
King
or whatever. I was like, this is gonna be stupid.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's good.
Is it? I haven't listened to it yet.
I'm enjoying it. So props to you, Beyonce, always dragging us out with some good hits.
And we're always like, okay, Beyonce, what's this? And then we're like, oh damn, okay, Beyonce, sorry, I doubted. Sorry.
Exactly. So that's my summer picks. I hope you guys enjoy it.
Just to look at this Beyonce's album again is reminding me of why the Lion King movie should have been actual human beings in like it should have been a kingdom in Africa, and they're like the Lion Kingdom is like the lion is their crest, and you could have still had the stampede
right
with the animals.
Oh, yeah, you know,
I think it would have been so much more interesting.
I could see that.
It would have been good. So, anyways, well, thanks for your recommendations. I'm gonna get
Let's
on
do it.
It.
Yeah.
We're done.
Yeah.
This is it.
We did it.
Is it, Anike? This is the end of the episode.
Another great episode. We've got in the books.
Put it in the books. We're in the 90s now. Episode 200 is rearing its head right around the corner.
So don't forget to leave us a review so more people can catch on for the fun.
Exactly, as we hit into 200. Share it, like it, get into it. We're on Twitter at Minority Corner with a K.
Yes, you can email us at minoritycornerwithak@gmail.com.
You can also join the Facebook group, the Minority Corner Kids Club group page. And there's a lot of great conversations happening in there. And that's it. Well, I mean, I'm sure there's more.
Yeah, but we love you guys. Thanks for listening.
And a big thanks to Woody,
yes,
our editor.
Thanks, Woody.
And a big thanks to Brana for supplying La Musica.
Giving us our jams.
And a big thank you to all of you for listening to Minority
Corner.
Because
together, we're the majority. Bye.
Ciao.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.